Hi, I'm Siggy, born and raised in St. Catharines, Ontario, and now living in the nation's capital of Ottawa.
And I'm Jezzy, born in Manila, Philippines, raised in Toronto, Canada, and schooled all over southwestern Ontario. You're listening to the Hala Hala Podcast, a delicious mix of pop culture and the Filipino-Canadian life.
We at the Hala Hala Podcast acknowledge that our creative project spans these areas and territories and are grateful for the traditional knowledge keepers and elders who are with us today, those who have gone before us, and the youth that inspires us. We recognize the land and benefits it provides all of us as an act of reconciliation, as recommended by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's 94 Calls to Action and gratitude to those whose territory we reside on, work on, or are visiting. I'm podcasting from the traditional unceded territory of the Algonquin and Ishbeg people.
And I'm podcasting from the traditional lands of the Huron-Wendat, the Seneca, and most recently the Mississaugas of the Credit River. In honor of Filipino Food Month this April, we at the Hala Hala Podcast will be releasing some of our favorite merienda episodes. And so you'll be getting one of those today, obviously, April 19th, and you'll be getting another one on April 26th. And then we'll be back on our regular release track come May. But before we get into our re-release of Boodle Fight and Kamayan, let's catch up,
Sig. What I have miss you. Been How up are to? You?
I know. How
Easter
are you?
Easter has come and gone. And
I know.
I do have one quick shout out because I want to get to what your pop culture catch up
is.
Yes,
yes.
I have a lovely colleague who I've mentioned before from Chantal who is in Winnipeg and has been sharing our podcast to lovely Filipino people in Winnipeg. And we're going to dig a little bit more. So if you're listening from Winnipeg, hello, hello, hello.
Hello. Shout out to people in Winnipeg, Filipinos in Winnipeg. And let me just say, I understand correctly, one out of four or one out of five Winnipeggers are Filipino. Like, that is a great ratio. 20 to 25% of people in Winnipeg are Filipinos. Isn't that incredible?
I think that's quality stats. And yeah. I know that there is a big contingent of people in Winnipeg that are creatives, whether it's something boiling over there called the Mubuhay Musical. I heard about you guys. We're going to delve into more, but thank you so much for downloading and listening. We'll want to hear more from you guys. But Kuya, let's get back. Hello, yes. Winnipeg. Pop culture, what have you been up to? I miss you. I haven't talked to you
in a bit of time.
In a while. Yeah. Okay.
So two things that I've been into pop culture-wise is Boys in the Boat, which is on Amazon Prime, which is a movie, and it is one of these biographical sports dramas. And it's all very predictable. But the best part is that Boys in the Boat is actually based on the real life story of the junior varsity team from the University of Washington, where they go and eventually compete, these novice rowers, and eventually get to the 1936 Olympics.
And
what I think is really special in all of this is, you know, it's your classic story of people overcoming adversity, and people in this case overcoming the adversity of the Great Depression. And they focus on this one particular person who's in seventh seat, if you know anything about rowing. His name is Joe Rance, and how he basically was, back in those days, quote unquote, a hobo that was trying to study to be an engineer and looking for a job. And what he found out was that if he made the rowing team, he would get a job and find a way to be able to pay for university. And this rowing team just kind of came together and was able to kind of row together as one, you know, I think is the question. And of course, I'm expected to watch this because I think
you are a rower. I was the coxswain
at my various university, you know, rowing teams that I've been a part of, and then been part of the one of the boats that had represented Canada in the Gay Out Games. That was held in Montreal many, many decades ago. So,
it wasn't that long ago.
Well, it kind of feels that way, but yeah, it had like a pretty good cast, and it was produced by George Clooney.
George Clooney, right?
Really loved it.
Yeah.
And I just have to say, I was like listening to the lingo of the rowing, and they were so dead on. So whoever wrote this and did the screenplay, the technical advisor, it was beautiful. It was beautifully filmed too, and I just really appreciate it. So it was fun, and it was fun just telling Michael a little bit about, made me remember some of my stories in terms of rowing, and you know, it just made me think, I need to go see a regatta again sometime soon and just kind of revisit that part of my life. Like, I haven't put it away, but it's always fun to just kind of reminisce, but I can't just get up anymore for 4 o'clock rowing sports on Lake Ontario. Yeah. But beautiful film. You know, it feels like one of these Sunday afternoon films that you can watch.
Okay.
Yeah, really beautiful if you've got the time. The other thing that I've been just kind of up to pop culture-wise is really catching up on RuPaul's Drag Race season 16. So I'm now totally caught up.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
So I know when this podcast comes out, it will be announcing the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race season 16. So it's either going to be Safira Cristal or it's going to be Plain Jane or Nymphia Wynn. You know, Sigs?
Who's your money on, Kuya?
I think by a nose hair, it would be Plain Jane is who I would predict. That's so funny. I guess we'll find out when this episode releases if I'm right. But, you know, I wouldn't be mad if it was Nymphia Wynn. I'd be okay if it was Safira. I'm not totally sold by her, even though she's like the grand dame of this particular season. So that's what I've been up to. Pop culture wise, what about you, Sigs? I think have had like a double pop culture.
I do.
These
episodes are sort of linked to my little journey. We went to Niagara during Easter.
Yes.
And on Good Friday, my daughter, March 29th, my daughter and I ventured to Toronto to see Olivia Rodrigo in concert.
Yes. So, oh my gosh! Tell us more.
I was texting you the whole time.
Yes, you were. So I know.
We got on the lovely GO train. We got there, and you had told me there was a pop-up where you could get some gear.
It was around my house.
It was right
actually.
Near your house because I texted you. But unfortunately, we didn't get there till late afternoon. So we dropped off our stuff at my Uncle Dan's house and Delaney and I headed over to the pop-up. But the lineup was ridiculous. People were in the lineup since 11.
Oh my gosh.
Not being able to. So it was, there was this lovely lady that was standing there and I'm like, Delaney, do you want to like go to eat instead? She's like, I guess so. But there's this lady who'd heard us talking. She's like, do you want to just get in the line and get a picture by the bus? It's okay. You can come in. And she was super sweet. And we just took a picture and I'm like, you hungry? And Delaney was like,
Yeah,
let's go to Jollibee. So that is our taste test this week.
Right.
About our Jollibee experience. So we went to that. We stopped by Ohio. Have you ever heard of Ohio? Ohio is like, it's like an arcade with all the claw things that you can pick up.
I've seen lineups getting into that place. Yeah.
I was just like, oh my God, it's right beside the Jollibee. And Delaney had a great time. Then we went back home. We went to Olivia Rodrigo and my daughter was just like, okay, I'm going to get a shirt. I'm like, it's all good. Let's go. She got a purple shirt. We went upstairs, got food. We sat down and it was so funny. I was surrounded by other parents and kids.
Oh,
so
I love it.
It was so cute. We were just on the edge and Delaney was like, wow, this is a really big place. And she had her drink and this woman's like, she can put her drink down next to mine. My daughter moved it. And so it was so fun to watch my daughter with big eyes just cheering for Olivia Rodrigo.
I can just imagine.
And they had the candles that spelled out guts and then the candles were burnt out. Then Olivia came on and Delaney was just cheering and we just got in like singing everything.
Every song. Oh,
and it
gosh.
Was just, my daughter loved it and she really listened to the set list. We downloaded, it's so easy now to download a set list from Apple.
Oh yeah, totally.
And
thank
she was
you,
like,
Apple.
It says, thank you, Apple. And then they totally like adjusted it because she made Obsessed in there. And my daughter had the best time and it was so funny. Like I was just watching her just really sing it. And then she'd like our songs on and we'd sing Deja Vu and we sang Vampire. And the deeper cuts that I didn't know, like Logical and Unlogical. Olivia was on this moon that moved around the whole stadium. And she was in front of us and obviously like she can't see everyone. My daughter was just like waving.
Oh my God, totally.
That's
what I would be doing.
Exactly.
I've done that Madonna, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And so she was just, I have these videos and I'm just like, oh my God, you know, you're turning 10. And she was just singing and then, you know, popping like a little sour peach in her mouth and just waiting for the next song. And she had the most amazing time. Like, I think we went shopping the day before. My mom got her like these little flats, Michael Kors flats. She was wearing flare jeans. Like, she had a great time. It was super
fun. Totally
styling
she was singing.
Too. I just thought of the time when we took your niece and we went to Backstreet Boys.
Yep.
And she was the same. Yep. She didn't cry, but she had a hoot. And then I had to explain what an encore was because she's like, but she didn't sing Good For You or Get Him Back. I go, so there's something called an encore. When the end, you want to cheer really loud and they're going to come back. She's like, why do they do that? I go, it's something called ego. We'll talk about that another time.
So she was just
singing and knowing the words. And still, Kuya, I told this before, my daughter like censors herself. So even like, you know, the word is like fame fucker, she'll say dream crusher, or so, or like in driver's license, she's like, I really, she's just like, I really, really loved you. Like she sings the clean version and it makes me laugh.
Oh my God.
She had a great time. I totally felt like a dad, but she really was just, she had a great time. I loved it.
What a special moment for the two of you too, right?
Like, I know, totally.
Her first concert with you. And on top of it all, Sigs, like, a Filipino on stage.
I know, a Filipino on stage. Like, and my daughter was asking, like, do you think she'll do songs, like, not on Guts or Sour? I'm like, she's not going to do that song that you and I sing the duet to from High School Musical to Musical.
No, series. She's not going to do it. She's gonna
I
do
love
her.
That song, yeah, but she's not going to do it. You don't think? I'm like, no, honey, they're not. It's okay. Like, not a big deal. But she was into it. And even the songs, I'm like, I don't quite know the song. She's like, no, it's this song. And like, she had a great time. And it's Filipino, man. It was like a Filipino. We had an Easter Filipino weekend because not only did we go to Olivia Rodrigo, we went to Jollibee.
Right.
Do you know what my family did Easter Sunday?
What did you do Easter Sunday? Let me know.
My parents were like, we're doing this on
Easter Sunday.
Oh, I almost laughed. I'm like, are we in our own Filipinos Easter Sunday? Much better, I would say. My parents did a Kamayan. And they did a Kamayan for our Easter Sunday feast. And like, I loved it. The kids and I went to church. Emily, the kids and I went to the church. We came back. My parents went the night before because they were ushers, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Went to the really long one. And we came in. My dad was Ihao. He was on the barbecue. There was tons of like bangos. He was frying up. We've seen the spread. I will share the pictures as part of our photos for this episode. And there was so much meat. They had even like the Jamaican rice, the dirty black rice, and a pineapple, fresh mango, tomatoes, bangus. My mom sort of cheated. It was so good. Cuban meat, pork belly, you name it. It was adobo. It was so delicious. I think our eyes were bigger than our stomachs because it almost like, I'm like, we ate some, right? But it almost looked like just a little bit of a notch. But
yeah.
It was such a come on face. Delaney was just smiling and just going, oh my God, I love coming to Lola and Lola's because we eat with our hands. And I'm like, you know what? It was just the best celebration. It was super fun. My mom was super happy. She was celebrating 75 with her family. And it was nice to have us all at the table and celebrating. So it was just Kamayan time, using your hands, just eating and just loving it up. And then just being so full afterwards. It was chef's kiss. It was just a great visit. Oh,
that sounds like a chef's kiss for sure. Yeah. Well, your Easter Sunday Kamayan weekend certainly rivaled what I did Easter weekend, which was I saw Madonna for the last time in Atlanta. But I think what you've done, like, you know, I wish I could have done that too, like in terms of eating with my hands. I love eating with my hands, right? When I can't. Right. I mean, like, I don't do it well and I don't look as graceful as my parents do.
Oh,
when they
absolutely.
Eat with their
hands. Right. Yeah.
But since Sigs, your family enjoyed Kamayan, I think it would be really fitting that we revisit our Merienda episode on Boodle Fight Kamayan from season 3. So season I think three. We should do that, right?
All right.
Okay, here we go, listeners. Let's revisit Boodle Fight Kamayan, episode 314 and 3/4 from that season.
So Jez and I today are going to be talking about Boodle Fight experience in the Kamayan. So when you hear this word, what is it? So just like any other Asian countries like Japan, Korea, and China that uses chopsticks in their meals, Filipinos have their own traditional way of dining known as the Kamayan. So the word Kamay, the root word, is a Tagalog term for hands. Kamayan is the act of eating using your bare hands. Now, the dining culture is practiced by locals ever since the pre-colonial era, and I know you have some historical facts about that. And the use of utensils such as spoon and fork or knife only began when the Spanish and the American occupation happened. So even so, this form of practice is still carried on and passed on from one generation to another up to like present time. And even growing up, it's so reminiscent. And I know as we discuss this going on, it shares a little bit about the immigration story of my parents coming to Canada. Now, Kuya, we hear a lot about Kamayan. How did Boodle Fight suddenly be emerged into Kamayan, like in hand? Pun intended.
I think sometimes we think Kamayan and Boodle Fight are synonymous, or at least to the outsider, they may be synonymous. And to some Filipinx in the diaspora, they might also think that they're synonymous, but they're not. Again, Kamayan is what Siggy just described, where it typically, whoever's dining with the centerpiece of all the meals, do people pick and then put them on their plate and then they kind of eat it. So that tends to be a very composed and curated experience by themselves. But with respect respect to boodle fight, there's something very artistic in the way yes. one sees the food. With respect to Kamayan, there's something very artistic around how you actually eat the food with your hands. And I'm sure you're going to talk about this later, but at least certainly with some of my memories growing up, I remember my mom and even my grandmother, my Lola, who would be, I'd see them eat with their hands and they would tell me, oh yes, this is very traditional how you eat with your hand. There was something very rhythmic about kind of picking the rice, picking the ulam, putting it together, and then putting it to your mouth. Again, it felt like I was watching waves in an ocean. Waves There's, in an ocean.
It's so funny when reviewing this and researching this, a lot of the method is with the, using my left hand right now, for listeners, you can't see, you have your index, your middle finger, and your thumb. And the point is to scoop with your index and your middle finger, and your thumb is the one that pushes the food into your mouth.
Right.
And you're exactly, and both of you that are doing it right now, there yep. is this fluid motion. If you grab the rice, you pull it up and push. A very rhythmic, ocean-like push, yeah. go up through. You absolutely caught it.
I swear, it feels very meditative when I've seen my mom eat with her hands. It's actually quite beautiful. And like, that's why I think it's almost artistic and rhythmic. It's mesmerizing mm-hmm. because it's almost like she's sewing. It almost seems like she's yes. sewing in some ways. It's kind of like pick up the food, pick it up with the rice, then put it in and then insert it into your mouth so gracefully. It's interesting, right? Because I think if you tell people that don't know anything about our culture that we eat with our hands, can sometimes eat with our hands, it kind of brings up certain ideas. And again, Kamayan, at least in my experience and when I've seen it with my cousins, and I'm like so clumsy about it because I don't have enough practice with it. It's usually family and mealtime oriented, which is very different from boodle fight. And that's boodle right. fight is actually a tradition. I think what history tells us is that came from military practice of eating a meal where long tables were arranged and banana leaves laid down. An array of Filipino foods were also laid out, which is also artistic unto itself. Because I think if you just Google boodle fight, you'll see yep. beautiful banquet tables of eye-catching, mouth-watering food put out. And I would say that true boodle fight actually involved no sitting at all, where it actually had people stand, or more specifically, soldiers stand shoulder to shoulder with each other while using the practice of Kamayan or eating their hands. But as opposed to traditional Kamayan, where you sit down at the table and are eating Filipino food, people are actually picking everywhere. So it's almost like, you know, a free-for-all. And I think that that's kind of how the fight occurred. But it's interesting. I had not known that it was part of the military practice, as you said, doing a bit of research. And actually, there's a researcher and a PhD candidate, Adrian De Leon, who at the University of Toronto written about this and published, and I loved his title. It was like, everybody was boodle fighting. Military histories, culinary tourism, and diasporic dining. And talks a lot about kind of that military practice of kind of putting it all together. I don't know if you got any thoughts about that, but I just thought it was like fascinating that this has come from military tradition, actually.
I'm just so fascinated. When I saw your work, I'm like, I want to hear more. I just... not shocked because I'm like, oh, this is cultural, but really a military, why would this be? But as you're going to describe or whatever, you know, the whole action of itself, I can see where it sort of stems from.
Like, yeah, and it's actually quite symbolic too. If you went to a restaurant that says that they offer a boodle fight experience, usually you sit down, but everyone is actually standing shoulder to shoulder, just picking through at foods. And the emphasis on shoulder to shoulder is that apparently it signifies equality in the dining. So you're actually eating with people that are higher ranked than you, lower ranked than you, and that everyone's together, mm-hmm. communally eating and sharing a meal together. And apparently, like some of the tradition that occurs in terms of the boodle fight experience is very much before the dining begins. It's almost like a ready, set, go. And then it's like, eat. But the most senior officer apparently says, ready on the left, ready on the right, commence boodle fight, you know, and then it's like, go. Yeah. I don't know if you've had this boodle experience. I know I've had it a couple of times. It is incredible because then it demarcates the start of the entire experience and people just start picking and eating and competing for this kind of stuff. But to just kind of back up a little bit, boodle, interestingly enough, when I was reading Adrian's article, it had said that it came from American military slang, really from the idea of what kit and caboodle is. And this is what I found really interesting. Apparently, kit means like the soldier kits that, of course, soldiers would carry.
Yeah.
And caboodle actually meant sweet contraband. So typically it would be like pastries and sugars and all of that. So it meant like partaking in all the sweets. But interestingly enough, caboodles meaning changed over time to also mean groups and crowds of people. So kind of taken together, it's like when you say kit and caboodle, it means soldiers all gathered together is really what it meant. And that they were partaking over some type of loot, usually sweets in the American tradition. But you can see how from the 1800s, this idiom eventually gets to the Philippines because of American imperialism in the early 1900s. And you can see that then it was adopted by the Filipino military themselves and just shortened it to boodle and boodle fighting. So it's interesting because it makes me think, oh, well then in that context, that means this type of food, apart from regular Filipino military rations, was seen as a luxury, was seen as a loot where people would compete over. So I just thought, oh, that's fascinating how these food delights were more than just basic military provisions and then took on this expression, kit and caboodle, or just boodle and boodle fight. Isn't that interesting?
Well, that's totally like an origin story. And then like, how did that, Kuya, on a sidebar, did caboodle suddenly become like a makeup kit container in the 90s where it was
that
called the caboodle,
I have
right?
No idea. Yeah, but no, I guess like if I had to take a guess, the meaning had then changed from loot to luxury to like a bag of goodies in some ways.
I think that's, you just explained it. Like it's just a bunch of loot, right? So all females, all her makeup and all that stuff, or males makeup or whatever, and jewelry, it's all together. You got it together, caboodle. So
caboodle,
I love
the fight. Tournament. And then in this case, you're all fighting over a loot. And in this it's a loot of really great Filipino food. The other interesting thing about all of this is that, as I had said, there are bunches of tables put together, banana leaves, and then just a spray of food all over the place. For me, what's fascinating is that it's in contrast to what we were talking about earlier, Kamayan being rhythmic and artistic in some ways. Here, there's like just a flurry of activity of people just picking at food and eating, picking and eating, picking and eating. And it's more of a banquet and a la carte oriented experience,
right,
and almost celebratory in focus in a lot of ways. So although that this is a military practice, it has become celebratory to what you see in modern day Filipino culture and what's been exported in the diaspora as a whole. I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
I find this topic gives me so many feelings. Like, I find it so emblematic of our culture because it's always like, you know, that fact of we're going to lay out the spread, please.
Yes.
Enjoy. Do you want this? Do you want this? It's like having a Lola or a Tita or my mom guide me through. Anak, did you eat? Come here, come here. You have this. Tikman mo. Taste this. Come in. And they're going to watch you to get the food and get it. There's just, it's visceral. Like, it's, you go in and please come use your hands. There's no other, like, formalities of it. The food is all here. And we'll talk about, like, this development, this rage coming on. It's just, I don't know, it's just emblematic and symbolic of this art culture that's becoming popular. I just find it like just a very big symbol.
Yeah, I think it has become a huge symbol now. I think that this is also where my worry is, and I'm glad that we're actually taking a Merienda episode to kind of really delineate it, that people outside of our culture look at boodle fight and think that that's all we do, right? No, I do wonder about some of our North American Western counterparts who, if some people just think, oh, we come home every night, lay out the banana leaves, you know, and then eat a spread, right? And if you were actually to make an actual boodle fight experience,
oh my gosh,
it takes half a day, I'm sure, right?
It takes so much time. And like, listeners, I highly encourage you, like Kuya Jez just said, if you look up Kamayan Feast or Boodle Fight, there are so many vloggers out there like, hi, we're having a boodle fight. They are exhausted. And one girl I was watching today, she's so funny. She's like, I'm sweating. It's 100 degree weather and I prepped all this stuff, like all the fresh lumpia, I sort of cheated, you know, the kanin is really hot, the rice is really hot, it's steaming, I gotta get banana leaves out, like I'm so glad to sit down and eat. But there is so much effort to make
it,
to set all this stuff, just to piles of food everywhere. There's so much more to it. And I think what's tied with it, and this is something that I grew up with, I know Kuya, you're gonna be able to identify, when you eat with your hands, like there's this like popular notion that when you eat with your hands it makes food food taste better.
Yes, and, like, I would agree.
There's obviously no scientific proof for it. And I think most locals, like from the Philippines and my family, you know, sometimes even encourage people to practice with Kamayan, an act of like generosity. But it's so funny being born in Canada and the use of Kamay was such like, it wasn't like it was taboo, but like there was a time and place for it. I think I remember being first generation born in Canada, my parents coming in 1975, and like early times, kuya, close your eyes, like the dinette, corral, dinner plates,
yes,
the kanin and stuff. And when we were with like our neighbors who were Filipino, they would use their hands, whether it's like the KFC or the adobo, and going into it. As I started growing older, it happened less. It would happen at a Filipino like picnic or whatever where we'd kamay. But as soon as it was that thing, and I have these memories, and my parents haven't caught up with the podcast, so I'll freely talk about it, and I'm sure we'll talk about it once they listen, where they didn't want me to use my hands because, you know what, we were in North America, we have a fork and knife, mm-hmm. and it was almost a guilty pleasure. One of the funniest things I think of when I think of Kamayan, we made Filipino feast for neighbors once, and my parents, my mom, like, they lived right next door, mm-hmm. and we made them stuff. And my mom had like this, she had like a huge pot of adobo. She gave the adobo to them and left a couple pieces in the pot. She took some rice, she put it in the pot, and then she's like, Siggy, I'm like, are you going to eat that now, Mom? She's like, yeah, I will. She's like, can you just pull all the blinds down? I'm like, okay. And my mom went in and put the rice and get the sabao and the sausage. She was in there with like three fingers in there. And I heard a knock at the door. Mom's like, who is it? And it was the neighbor saying, are you going to eat with us? Mom's like, no, I'm sort of full. And she literally just wanted to eat with her hands, like in the privacy of her home.
That's so great, Tita Suze.
it was just one of those like things where it was seemed so taboo or just like not appropriate because in the Western culture, people don't use their hands. It was exotic. And I'm going to say that like in quotation marks or, ooh, some cultures use chopsticks. And then, oh, you use your hands?
You know, and I don't blame Tita Suze. Like, right. I don't know that I would kind of interpret it as like being shy or shameful or anything like that. I wonder if just Tita Suze didn't want to explain to some people that this is part of our culture and she just wanted to kind of indulge. And there is a bit of indulgence that kind of occurs eating with your hands, I think. My mom purrs.
She purrs.
I mean, she purrs, period, right? It's just, it's hilarious. But, you know, my sisters and I just kind of giggle on the side. But when I see her eat with her hands, and I have to say, it's usually when it's in the Philippines, she typically purrs. And I think you're right. Like, I think sometimes, you know, you just want to be able to kind of be free with the way that you know how to dine without having to kind of draw attention to it, regardless for any non-Filipinos that weren't aware of this particular dining practice.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we have no tenedor and all of you, but it's so true. It tastes better. Like, it totally does, like, with using your hands.
You know, my mom's been kind of like the grounding memory here in terms of using your hands, in terms of eating. Mm-hmm. I know that when we're back in the Philippines, especially when we're in Pangasinan, everyone's using their hands. It's me that's like, look at this man in yellows. Who's just eating with his fork and spoon, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's too good for us. Can't eat with his hand. And I just am like, I'm so sorry. I'm just so inadequate eating with my hands. Because again, I don't have enough practice with it. But I promise you, Sigs, the next time we get to go to the Philippines, I'm going to challenge myself to eat more with my hands.
I just appreciate that this is becoming a trend and a bit of a rage.
Yeah, I appreciate that too. Like the fact that now its popularity is certainly on the rise. Mm-hmm. And it's attributable to two things. One is culinary tourism, as I was reading from the article that I was telling everybody about earlier by Adrian De Leon. Mm-hmm. I think part of it is that it's very Instagram worthy. If you look on Instagram,
it's
food porn. Like if it's set out perfectly and beautifully and according to color, it's quite beautiful and it's quite appetizing in a lot of ways. Would you not say?
It becomes an experience. I've mentioned this guy before, B-Boy Kim on Instagram. He has Lola's Kitchen, which is based in Ottawa. And he goes to some people's houses and he prepares a Kamayan feast in the shape of hearts. Wow. And also has a guy that plays saxophone and creates the thing. He's doing great stuff. I've been dying to order from him. And he makes these beautiful hearts. He'll go and set up, becomes masked up, gloves or whatever, gets all the food prepped and then leaves. It's gorgeous. It becomes an experience. It's just this whole, you know, you want to experience a part of Filipino culture. It is this. I just, like you said, with culinary tourism, I had friends, and I had mentioned this on the podcast before, Adam and Suzanne, and they were mentioning, one gentleman was trying to teach them how to use his hands, and they're like, how do you do that? How do you do it so quickly? And literally, like, Siggy, he used his finger index and his middle finger, and it looked like an art, and he just made it very simple, and Suzanne's like, I tried my best, but I mean, the food was so good, I was just, like, sucking my fingers. But the way that they did it, it's just, they're very adventurous. They were in Asia, and they just thought it was an amazing experience, and just, I don't know, like, seeping into that culture, being like, it's gorgeous, it's an art. So
it is an art, and it's beautiful, and it makes curious food adventurers come.
Whether
it's to the Philippines, or interestingly enough, and we've seen this here in Toronto and all over southwestern Ontario, but I'm sure it is in any major city that has a large enough Filipino population, that the turo turo restaurants, which are like counter-driven restaurants, you know, where you turo turo can mean like choose, choose, or pick, pick. In other words, you point what you want to eat. So they're basically hot plate restaurants, have actually pivoted and have started to kind of create these boodle fight experiences where now it's more than just the Filipino community.
Anyone.
It's for anyone that's adventurous and wants, again, something Instagram worthy, which is kind of like what's driving the experience. I think beautiful to take pictures of. It then becomes a destination, and then hence culinary tourism has really been able to kind of promote the popularity of this. The second reason why I think it's also popular, not only just for non-Filipinos, people that don't come from a Filipino origin, is that I think it's become, as you said, emblematic. And the way I kind of interpret that is it's a form of culinary nationalism. So it's recognizable, kind of like the tinikling is very recognizable, or the Maria Clara is very recognizable. I think now if you get people in the know, especially like foodies, for example, they know that this is Filipino cuisine. And I think in some ways, I've seen my parents take pride. You know, I remember we were at a boodle fight in Ajax celebrating my brother-in-law's birthday. You know, my parents were like very full of pride of like, oh, like, you know, teaching the grandkids how to eat with their hands and stuff like that. So I think that that's part of why, I mean, there's a rise in Filipino nationalism with respect to this. And then there's also just kind of this culinary tourism that's been promoted, if you will, especially by those food adventures from Instagram. And when you see, listeners, if you ever Google any of this, it looks like a tropical leisure experience. But I think sometimes I do worry, Sigs, about the fact that sometimes we are now entangling these tropical leisure food adventure experiences with a past that we don't know too much about. And it was shocking to kind of do research to say, oh my God, this is a legacy feature of American imperialism and past militarized history. And for any of our listeners that don't know, when the Americans were, if you will, colonizers themselves in the Philippines, they had used strategically the Philippines as a jumping off point to, if you will, enforce democracy throughout Southeast Asia in some ways. I don't know how successful they were with that project, but nevertheless, they now have a history of bases left that have now been vacated. And if you think about it, this also has been vacated, but we've kind of taken it up on our own. But it's interesting to kind of think about how now all these things are being entangled. I don't know if you have anything to kind of like add to that, or if you got any observations around that.
No, I was waiting for you to say that, because I'm just like, wow, the background or history is just very interesting, right? And how things have changed. So
I think certainly our parents probably know of that history. I just have a very kind of faint idea about this history.
Yeah.
I think to myself, when I think about my nephews and nieces, or when I think about your kids, they might not know anything about this history and know that these things are kind of entangled with one another. My other concern too about the boodle fight experience, and listeners, I hope you know that I'm not like putting it down. These are just more concerns than anything else. This is, I do worry about exoticization of boodle fight experience, and that it becomes a myopic view of Filipino cuisine. Kind of like what I talked about earlier, how may come to think, oh, you come home and you rip out the banana leaves and you lay out a whole feast every night. It's like, I can tell you, that's not what I'm doing. Sometimes it's like, where's the Jollibees, which is another food experience altogether that we can talk about in a future Merienda episode. But I do worry that this may contribute to stereotypes and create a monolithic idea about the Filipinx dining practices. And I kind of am already seeing it, meaning that people just think boodle fight is just another way of saying kamayan. But those are very two different ways of eating with your hands that are two separate Filipinx dining practices. So that just concerns me, right? Like that I think there's actually a distinction to be made, a distinction that shouldn't be lost in a lot of ways. So.
I'll tell you, folks, it's a lot of work. It's even a lot of work. And you and I both know to make lumpia.
Oh, my God, like, yes.
You know what
you
I mean?
You need a day to make lumpia.
Yeah, like 2.5 hours for me to roll like a 50 or 100. And I have to have that time to do it. Like, I know many of my friends who are not Filipino. Siki, you make it so good. It's yeah, guys, it takes a lot of work. And you're lucky I don't charge you. But I love you guys and I'll share with you. I wish it could be that. And you and I both know, we could totally buy it at TNT or ready-made. But it's not the same. We
it's
have recipes from
same.
Our family. My Lola, Gloria Du, I love you. I honor her by making variation of what, you know, her secret recipe. I think I sort of struck it down with my wife. It's like, we're not going to have lumpia again. I'm like, no, girl. You know how long it takes me to cook? I know you love it. But, she understands the time.
Lumpia Pritong, for example, you only have it at celebrations, which is really interesting, right? Yeah. Because that's exactly it. Boodle fight experience tends to be more celebratory, although it's really interesting that it's mixed up with something like the military. And again, just interesting to kind of think about. I think you need to ask your question.
What would be in your Kamayan feast?
Yeah, I think many things in my Kamayan feast, and then I can't wait for you to tell me what would be in yours. But I think to myself, there's actually a bit of a formula in terms of a Kamayan feast a boodle fight experience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So very similar to a charcuterie board. You need hard cheeses, soft cheeses, you need crackers, you need a dried apricot or a dried fruit of some sorts.
This is why I love you. And listeners, if you've been listening to this for the past 3 seasons, old and new, friends were, Queen's like, okay, here's the thing. This is the plan. I'm going to tell you about it and you get right into it. Tell me more. Tell me more.
So just as much as a charcuterie board, which by the way, I had introduced to my nephews and nieces 2 years ago and it was a big success. There is a way to compose a charcuterie board and you have to hit all the different elements. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing for a boodle fight experience, that if you want to compose a boodle fight experience, you need the following. You need a dry dishes, you need breakfast meats, you need inahao or charcoal grilled meats, you need fruits, veggie salad, pickled vegetables, deep fried items, and a carb, typically a rice and or noodle. With that said, I think for myself, in terms of dry dishes, I would want dried fish, in this case, tuyo. In terms of breakfast meats, my boodle fight experience would only include longanisa. Not tocino, but longanisa. And sweet, sweet longanisa. I don't want some of this other kind of longanisa that isn't sweet, and I'm not going to rename those regions, but longanisa for sure.
That is not our brand.
Sweet longanisa, yes. if you like savory longanisa, more power to you. But for
but
me,
sweet.
I
You're
like
right.
my longanisa nice and
You're
sweet.
Right.
And then... Okay. Charcoal grilled meats. Mm. I want my chicken marinated in 7-Up, you know, and then barbecued over those charcoals. Mm-hmm. And in terms of fruit, mangoes. And then what is a nice kind of balance to the sweetness of the mangoes and the marinated chicken and the sweet longanisa are salted eggs with tomatoes. So I love my Kamayan with that. And then finally, I like to kind of, you know, wrap it all up with lumpia scattered throughout the Kamayan experience. And for the carb, fried vegetable rice. I know usually it's garlic fried rice is what most people love, but I like my fried vegetable rice all the way. So that's kind of what I think in terms of my perfect boodle fight experience. How about you?
You know, there's such a balance. Like if folks, if you've been listening for a long time, I love that quiz. It's so polished. I'm like, here are things laid out. Meanwhile, I feel like such a basic bitch. Like, here's the thing. I say this right now, and I live for talking to you every Thursday and recording every week with you because I am very homesick right now.
Me too.
I was just like, after watching, you know, Jordan and Dino and then us talking about this and researching and I get to see your face, I'm just like, I am basic. Lumpia, kanin, barbecue on a stick with pork and ginger ale, and bango salty baby. It's just so basic. This is just really, it's been a year. We've been in COVID as we record this. I just want those basic things. And literally, I was like nearly tearing watching like YouTube videos today. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm reading your notes, Kuya. I'm just like, I'm so basic. I just give me some lumpia. And some
when
rice
I was writing my notes out, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm getting really hungry right now. And I promise you, post pandemic, we're going to have a boodle fight experience ourselves.
Well, exactly. I don't even care. I say we'd be in a parking lot of a Jollibee and we record like remotely on our phones. Yeah. Ghetto or not, you and I are like, this peach pie is great.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God.
It's funny now. Now, like I just said it, like it's interesting that we're talking about eating with our hands, Kamayan or whatever. COVID right now.
Yes, yes.
And I think you and I both have the same sort of observations. I know in Ottawa, I had mentioned Lola's Kitchen and he prepares Kamayan feasts and gives it to people. You don't see very many people congregating unless they're within their household. And I know Tamis Cafe does like a box, a boodle box.
Right.
Not in the restaurant. They're doing it. How has it been the same sort of trend in Toronto with COVID?
I've seen La Mesa do something like that, like boodle fight boxes and stuff like that. I think that they were doing this in and around, if memory serves me correct, around the Christmas period.
Yeah.
So that's what I've seen, like pick up your boodle fight boxes and stuff like that. And again, usually celebratory, you know, like, you know, for some celebratory occasion of sorts. I don't know when the next celebration is, but I'm now seriously thinking about ordering a boodle fight box from La Mesa, you know, maybe once it comes back out.
We'll just get one for vaccinations. We got vaccinated. Yeah. I get to see you.
Here's a boodle fight box, right? Enjoy. So.
Not even as fancy. Like, let's get a bucket of chicken and some rice. Like, come on.
Well, that's the modern day North American, Filipino, Canadian, Filipinx Canadian boodle fight experience. Just get a bucket of chicken, pour some gravy on it from Jollibee's, and get some spaghetti, sweet spaghetti along the way. So.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, Sigs, take us out.
All right, folks, I want to hear more about your Kamayan or Boodle Fight experiences. Email us at halohalopopculture@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Twitter at halohalopop, and we're on Instagram at halohalopopculture. You know what? Send us pictures, DM us, show us your Kamayan feasts that you partook in, and tell us about it. Halohalo Podcast is available on all podcast platforms. Rate us and leave a review.
Can't wait to see those pictures. We receive editorial feedback from Mary Beth Badian. Our musical theme is by Chel Turingan. We'll see all of you guys again real soon.
It's late, but are you hungry now?
I'm so hungry.